weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Big thanks to Betta De Silva for taking us through the afternoon here on 2FM. It's Tuesday the 6th of August and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and Rachel May Hannan with the new music show at 7 o'clock, we're live to Darren Farrell again in Paris for our daily Olympics update as we edge closer to Kelly Harrington's gold medal fight tonight. We'll also check in with Kelly's community as excitement grows around Portland Row. Paul Corrie's in studio and Mark Landing is standing by to talk football transfers. And we'll hear from Damien Duff as the League of Ireland title race heats up. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or you can get us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. Paul Corrie is with me in studio. I mentioned there that the League of Ireland title race is really heating up. And Paul, looking at the scenes between Damien Duff and Rory Higgins at the end of last night's game, you would have to say that they are heating up nicely.
It was frosty, wasn't it?
It was. And yeah. I thought that they were friendly. And I know Damien Duff gave an interview afterwards and said that he was his only friend in the league there for a while. He mightn't be his friend anymore. But
well, they were both part of Steve and Kenny's backroom team at the same time, I believe, because Duff would have been coach and Roy Higgins was opposition and analyst, so they would know each other very well. But there was certainly word said from Duff's side to Higgins that Roy Higgins kind of looked at him and pondered what had been said and didn't accept it too kindly. And that probably comes down to, I guess, the fact that we're into the final round of games in the League of Ireland and the two teams are, you know, 3 points separating between the two of them. It was a big game. There was a sending off. There was a few maybe contentious decisions. Duff obviously wanted to go and win the game, given that Derry had a man sent off. But it's starting to bubble.
I know there was no winner, but who was the loser in that situation last night, do you think, team-wise and table-wise?
I think Shells, just given the fact that Sam Todd got sent off after 35 minutes and Shells had the guts of an hour to try break down that Derry defence and extend their lead at the top of the division. So the fact that they weren't able to not only score, they only had one shot on target, Marie. It was a save that you would expect Brian Maher to make. Ali Coote went close down the right-hand side, flashed across the box. Other than that, Shells didn't really lay a glove on Derry, and that will disappoint, I think, Damien Duff when they reflect on it. But it might be a point gained when you look back on things in a couple of weeks' time. But for now, and maybe when they initially go back to review the game, I think they'll feel like they could have done more.
Yeah, we'll have more of that in a little while. But just one other thing, both managers afterwards, Rory Higgins and Damien Duff, made the point of saying it's not just a two-way title race, it's a three-way title race with Shamrock Rovers in there as well. They were agreeing on that anyway.
Yeah, I guess you'd be foolish to rule Shamrock Rovers out, but I mean, on the basis of the first 24 games, Shamrock Rovers have been nowhere near consistent enough to, I guess, suggest that they're going to close the gap between the two teams at the top. I think one, Shamrock Rovers would have to find an extra gear, and they might get that. They might get a little bit of a kick when they play the teams in Europe and they come back with a bit of a spring in their step if they were to get good results and carry that into the league. But that hasn't happened for the first 24 games, and I think if they are to close the gap to the top, both Shells and Derry would really need to fall off. And if neither of those sides are to do that, I don't think Rovers have enough games or enough in the tank at the moment to suggest that they can. But the win against Waterford was very important. I was just looking at the table. I think it was last Friday they played, because it was games all throughout the weekend. At one point when they were drawing with Waterford, they were down in sixth.
Okay, so
it looked as if, you know, they were miles away from the top, but to actually come away with 3 points, given the fact that Derry and Shells have drawn, gives them a bit of a lifeline. But they're certainly going to need to start playing better. They're conceding sloppy goals. They're probably not scoring enough goals like they have done in previous years, so they would need to rectify both ends of the pitch. But they have the experience of doing it. They might do it, but I don't see it happening.
Okay, we'll get back into that in a while. Mark Langdon is going to join us as well. Lots of transfer news, lots happening in the broader football world as well. But really, it is the Olympic Games where everything is happening. We're going to cross over to Paris to Darren Farrell now. Darren, we're getting so excited about Kelly Harrington's fight tonight. I can only imagine what it's like in Paris at the moment.
Ah, Marie, it is absolutely so exciting here. I think it's a long build-up. We're obviously an hour ahead of you time-wise, so it's going to be very late for us here after 11 o'clock local time. But since I got up this morning pretty early, out and about nice and early, you know, wherever you go, there's Irish everywhere, wherever you meet, that is all the talk. It's buzzing, absolutely buzzing. And we're a little nervous. I think that's the feeling here. Everyone is just, you know, everyone really wants this to happen. Kelly Harrington to write her name into the history books, the Irish Olympic history books, win back-to-back gold medals, but slightly nervous. How are you feeling yourself about it?
Exact same. Like, just been talking to Paul about it here and Laura Lee outside. Just, we really want her to do it because it's one of those sports that so many people do. It's really hard to get a medal in it. It's so competitive. And she's just been such a warrior. She's been around for so long. She's got her opportunities. She's taken them. So,
yeah.
But nerves are, Darren, really, like.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, right, we've been in 9 Olympic boxing finals in 100 years of the Olympics, right? And for Kelly to be in back-to-back finals, to be in 2 of those, it's phenomenal, isn't it? And I think, you know, I know Katie Taylor maybe is the darling of Irish boxing, but Kelly Harrington is, you know, she's going to really supersede anything that Katie has done if she can pull this one off this evening, you know. So, yeah, looking forward to it. But I'm going to start, I guess, building up to the big moment, which is a little
Please
bit later
do.
On. Yeah, so as we know, she's going to fight Wenglu Yang of China, and she is the top seed here. They've won previous meeting 8 years ago in a world final. That was a different weight division and a lifetime ago, really, in terms of career paths, because Kelly really has just blossomed since then. You know, she's hoping to rewrite this Olympic history. First female athlete to win back-to-back gold medals in consecutive games across the sports. And we cannot wait for it. The fight is just underway at 10 o'clock Irish time, so you can watch it live on RT2 and The Player, coverage online as well. But we'll have live radio coverage on Radio 1, so you can join me for coverage of that. And part of our commentary team for the big fight will be Siobhan Madigan, and she'll be at the home of French tennis a little bit later on. It's strange to say that, actually, Siobhan, isn't it? Roland Garros, what a setting this is for maybe one of the biggest nights in Irish sport.
Yeah, Roland Garros, Darren, became the permanent home for French tennis in 1928. And here we are almost 100 years after that, looking for our own piece of Irish history on Avenue Gordon Bennett tonight. There are, I'm told, some tickets still remaining for tonight, but it's a 15,000 capacity stadium and I expect it to be absolutely hopping. Everyone I have met wants a little piece of the atmosphere that's going to be created inside the Roland Garros Stadium this evening. The action taking place on Court Philippe Chatrier with its roof closed. It's going to be noisy. It's going to be raucous. And let's hope it's going to be a night for Irish eyes to smile.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to see the tennis there myself. It is some venue, Siobhan. And anyone that's going along there tonight is really lucky just to even get inside there and to see such a unique event, boxing in the home of French tennis. What about the fight itself? Look, you've been covering Kelly Harrington fights for as long as you can care to remember, since the very beginning maybe, but you know, how are you feeling about the fight tonight?
Yeah, I'm feeling somewhat confident in it, because what I have seen of Kelly Harrington since boxing started here in Paris 10 days ago or 11 days ago has been a different, a cool, composed, a relaxed Kelly Harrington. A Kelly Harrington that is really, really savouring each and every moment that she has experienced here in Paris. And with that comes that element and that air of confidence about her ability, about her ring craftsmanship, again, about her know-how of what is required inside those ropes, because some of our Irish fighters, well, you know, much has been documented about how we're feeling hard done by some of the judges. Kelly Harrington has just put on an exhibition of boxing while she's been here. Her win in round one against Alessia Messiano was foot perfect. Panda Valdez fell after that with somewhat relative ease, and Kelly barely had to break sweat in that. Such was her commanding position in the ring. And you know, anybody that was lucky enough to be present on Saturday night for that thrilling win against Beatrix Ferreira, Kelly's speed of thought, the angles of the punches that she threw against the Brazilian, literally had her opponent bamboozled. And, you know, Kelly then used her boxing brain in round three. She kept her opponent at distance. She kept out of the danger zone and made it comfortable. Be what it may, that maybe not 5-0 on the judges' score lines at the end of the contest was the decision, but anybody that was present in the North Paris Arena on Saturday night for that semi-final was left in no doubt who the winner was, and that was Kelly Harrington.
Yeah.
So if she can bring that kind of form into tonight's fight against Wenglu, I can't see it going any other way.
I love your confidence, Siobhan. I love it. Siobhan will be joining myself and Adrian Eames a little bit later on for coverage of that big fight from Roland Garros. Looking forward to that already. So many Irish here, as I mentioned, and Kelly Harrington will have huge support inside that amazing arena. Jackie Hurley's been out and about talking to fans who are not only looking forward to this bout this evening, but embracing the Olympic experience.
Oh, fabulous. We're here a week and it's getting better and better each day. Hopefully tonight we'll crown it all with Kayleigh winning the gold. This is my fourth Olympics. I was in Sydney and I was honoured to be in the stadium. Probably the greatest night in world athletics ever. Tonight Sonia got her medal. It was such a thrill to be there. I was in Athens and then I was in London for Katie Taylor winning her gold medal. It was amazing.
Very confident. We're taking it home.
Well, we've been to the athletics. Which is good fun. He does the athletics, so
we saw the javelin, and then we thought that was really cool because the guy threw 89.34.
Yeah, and that's what we did this morning, and then tomorrow we're going to another athletics, like the Stade de France. It's impressive for a small country being 13th or 14th in the medals placing.
And is Kelly Harrington going to win a gold medal tonight?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
Hasn't it just been so amazing, all the Irish success?
Yeah, I was a little bit nervous about bringing a 4.5-year-old at the time, but like I was like, it's absolutely incredible to see all the Irish, like Tom Barr, Sophie Becker, Mosley, Adelike.
And what are you going to do tonight watching another hopefully amazing moment in Irish sport?
We are going to celebrate Kelly Harrington. Absolutely. She'd be phenomenal. She's come up against like such hardcore people and she's a tough cookie because she's Irish.
She absolutely is. Looking forward to that a little bit later on. Remember, it gets underway just after 10 p.m. this evening, Irish time, and we'll have you covered across the platforms on RTE. Now, Daniel Coyle and Shane Sweetnam were unable to get among the medals in the show jumping. Huge disappointment here. Both went clear in qualifying. They'd all given us great hope and they were afforded the opportunity to go out later in the order, but the course setup there this morning was so demanding. Only 3 of the 30 finalists actually went clear. Coyle and Legacy, they've been outstanding all season, but the mayor lost a shoe and then Shane himself a stirrup, so he retired with 4 fences down. And then Shane Sweetnam and James Cancruz, they had 12 falls. They finished 22nd. And a short time ago, Jackie bumped into Daniel Coyle in Paris City Centre as he was taking in some of the atmosphere with friends and family.
It's amazing, I guess. There's nothing like the Olympics. With my grandmother here and my parents here support me, and for sure it's disappointing we don't go away with a medal, team or individual, but I can't wait till the next one. But one thing I will be doing is I'll be supporting every other Irish person.
The Irish have just had such an unbelievable Olympics. Every day there's just been such good momentum. Same with you guys. I'm sure you feel the support from everybody here.
I do. There's no other event in the world or other competition that we have this support. So when it comes here and you come to the Olympics and you have people that don't actually understand the sports, and actually myself don't actually understand the sports, but I'm supporting somebody and hoping that they win, I get it. It's like nothing else, and the Olympics should always just stay being the Olympics.
And tonight then, the crown and glory for a lot of people, maybe get to go and watch Kelly win a gold medal tonight. How much would that mean to Ireland? And are you guys going to watch it here?
Of course, there can never be enough for that matter. The more medals, the better. It's my first Olympics and I hope I get a medal at the next one. But these guys are not done and I'll be for sure rooting for her tonight.
Yeah, and Daniel will be back. What a performer he is. Just a little bit unlucky. And that is sport, isn't it? It's all about the inches and just getting no luck whatsoever, Shane or Daniel, today. Now, in the athletics, no Ciara McGeehan in the 1500 metres today at the European... the European champion withdrew last night. This was such a disappointment, I think, for the entire Team Ireland, citing chronic Achilles issues as the reason for having to pull out on the eve of her race. But we did have Sophie O'Sullivan and Sarah Healy in the 1500 metres and both Charlene Maudsley and Sophie Becker in the 400. Let's go live to the Stade de France there this evening. Jessie Barr is standing by. How did the Irish get on today, Jessie?
Hiya, Darren. I hope you can hear me over the sounds of the women's discus throw ceremony. We're getting lots of medal ceremonies here before the action kicks off in about 15 minutes. Lots of Irish in action. Lots of female Irish in action, actually, this morning. We had Sophie O'Sullivan and Sarah Healy in those 1500 metre heats. Obviously, as you mentioned, no Ciara McGeehan in that third heat. Devastation for poor Ciara to just have another cruel Olympics affected by injury. But for Sophie and Sarah, Sophie in particular, bittersweet. A 2 second PB in that first heat this morning, the 1500, but finished just outside of those automatic qualifiers in seventh place. So she will go through to the repechage tomorrow afternoon. Sarah Healy will be joining Sophie in those repechage rounds as well. She, in the most narrow of margins in the last 20 metres, just lost her footing and was pipped on the line for that sixth place, that sixth automatic place in the semi-final. So she will be in the repechage as well tomorrow.
And in terms of the repechage, there's plenty of debate about this. What do you make of that format for the Olympics getting a second chance?
To be honest, Aaron, I don't know how I feel about it at the moment. I'm hearing mixed reviews from athletes. There's an awful lot of DNS, which means do not start, appearing beside people's names at the repechage. So it's telling us that a lot of athletes are just not turning up. You know, on paper, it seems like a really amazing opportunity for athletes who may not get a second run if they don't qualify other heats. But, you know, it is obviously doing that, and it's giving that second opportunity to be, you know, getting that time on the Olympic stage. But it does mean if you qualify through to your semi-finals, you're at a distinct advantage to your rivals because you've ran 3 days in a row, extra runs in your legs. So, look, it's a great opportunity for the girls, that two of them who would have missed out on qualifying through the semi-finals. But, you know, it does mean if they do qualify through, they have that extra run. We had those repechages for the women's 400s this morning as well. And obviously Sophie Becker and Charlene Maudsley were featuring in those, two people who got that second run in due to the repechage. So obviously we're very happy to get that extra run. Neither qualified through to that semi-final. They would have needed to win their overall heat or get the next two fastest times. I'll tell you, Darren, the 400 has just gone to a new level at this last couple of years, because the times that we're going through to those semis were just incredible. The girls would have had to both run big PBs to get into them.
Yeah, that was something that I've noticed myself there, Jesse. Like a lot of the Irish, you're going to have to run a PB time of your life just to be competitive in it. It's incredible, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, Charlene yesterday just missed out on an automatic qualifier, running a PB of 50.71. And I suppose to put that into context, that was our old national record that was held by Joanne Cudahy for over 10 years. So, you know, to think the calibre that Joanne was in, you know, European and Olympic European and World Finals, for her time to not even get through to an automatic semi-final is crazy. But look, the girls both performed really, really well. Sophie Becker managed to raise her performance from yesterday, finishing in a brilliant silver, second place behind the US athlete Kendall Ellis, who probably will go on to perform quite well in that 400. So, look, it's disappointing for the girls, but they both performed really, really well, you know, on this Olympic stage, and we will see them again in that relay on Friday.
Okay, and just finally and briefly, Jesse, what's on tonight? What can we look forward to?
Well, Darren, there is nothing but medals on offer tonight, and this is a night I'm particularly excited about. Before we even get going with all the finals, we have the women's 400 metre hurdle semi-final. I'm biased, I'm very excited about that, and it's not even the final yet, but we do have some really exciting finals, and probably the two that would be most of interest are the men's 1500 metre final, which is being kind of advertised as the grudge match, the battle royale between Josh Kerr of GB, who was world champion last year, and Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who is multiple world champion and defending Olympic champion. These two do not like each other. One of them is going to go home disappointed, and hopefully the other is going to go home with the gold. And I think it's going to be an electric race, and hopefully they push each other to a really good time.
Yeah.
And then finishing off with that women's 200 meters, you know, we've talked a lot about the Netflix documentary Sprint. There's a few names that were in that, including Gabby Thomas, who's leading the way, and Julian Alfred, who won the women's 100 metres. So some really exciting finals this evening to look forward to.
Okay, enjoy it. Thanks a million, Jesse Barr, there at Stade de France. Now at the Velodrome, the Irish women's team pursuit team of Lara Gillespie, Mia Griffin, Alice Sharp and Kelly Murphy were in action a little bit earlier on. They finished ninth in that particular race. Their time, 3 minutes,
33.958 seconds, a new national record. They actually smashed it by 2.5 seconds. Not bad for a nation without a velodrome, to be honest. But the disappointing thing is they needed to finish top 8 to qualify for the final. So they finished 9th. Dave Kelly spoke to the group after the race. He started with Kelly.
Kelly, a national record on the Olympic stage. Pretty special.
Yeah, this has been the culmination of like 2 years of really hard work. You know, to come to the world's biggest race and do a big PB is something that we've been dreaming of, and to actually make it a reality today is like, I don't know, it's a real joy. Like, I still can't quite believe it. For us, the race really started 2 years ago. We had to be top 10 to even be here today, and we saw off a lot of really good teams with some of the world's best riders. And you know, that was the hard part. Today was almost a free ride. It was an opportunity to really showcase ourselves in front of our friends and family, and I'm really proud of us.
Alex, was there a feeling that you had to set a new national record to have any hope of making the last 8?
Yeah, definitely. And like Kelly said, that was our goal, to come and do a PB and kind of race our own race and see where we are amongst the field. But yeah, we definitely put in a performance that we're proud of, and with that was a national record.
Lara, what's it like to be an Olympian?
Oh, it's so cool, and the atmosphere is absolutely amazing, and this is what we've all been working so hard for. So yeah, it's really special, and it's really special to be here with all these girls. I'm so proud of us, and we're like, yeah, it's just great to be part of this team. And yeah.
And Mia, we have to put this in context, because of the 10 nations here, Ireland is the only one without a velodrome.
Yeah, I think definitely we punch above our weight as a small nation, and we're a small group of girls, and together we're a close-knit, like, really good, tight team. And I think we put on a display today that we can so be proud of. And I think we are 0.2 even off qualifying as we speak now, and I think we can be so proud of that. And yeah, I'm just really happy that we put on this performance, and that we can like know that we left everything that we had on the track as well.
Absolutely, well done today, and thanks so much for talking to us. Thank you.
Yeah, well done to them. Unfortunately, they wouldn't make it through to that final, just missing out. But well done to all four there, Kelly, Alice, Lara and Mia, and of course Aaron Crichton, who was a reserve on that team. Real team effort there from the Irish cycling team. Jake Passmore just missed out on a place in the 3 metre springboard diving semi-final at the Aquatic Centre. He made a great start, 6 jumps. First 3 had him inside the cut mark, but then he just faded in the end, just 2.25 points away from progressing. He finished 21st place overall, with only the top 18 qualifying for the semi-finals. And I had the good honour of being at that event and speaking to Jake afterwards.
A bit of mixed emotions, could have been better, but I mean, it's not a terrible performance for my first Olympics.
You only found out you're going to be here in Paris a matter of weeks ago, really, wasn't it? So how did that feel about stepping out there for the first time?
Oh, it was great. I felt prepared, surprisingly. I felt like I've done enough, and no, I just came here to enjoy the experience and hopefully come back for the next couple.
You were just 19, and when did you find out you were going to be here?
2 days after my 19th birthday.
And that was in June, right?
Yeah, June.
What was it like that first dive? Was it a tough one to get off?
No, I felt surprisingly calm. I mean, I had to take an extra few seconds just to relax myself, but I felt good, yeah.
I spotted you behind the diving board. You have a unique way of maybe chilling out or relaxing before a dive. Maybe you can tell everyone at home what you do.
Yeah, well, I started juggling, and I found it helps keep me concentrated and gets my arms moving a little bit before I dive. So, yeah, helps me concentrate a little bit, and it's less boring than standing around.
You've missed out here on getting to a semi-final, but what will you take from this experience?
I'll probably have to think on that for a little bit longer, because I'm not really sure where... I know what dives could have been better, but I'm not really sure where I could have improved my own performance. So I'll probably look back at this for the next couple of weeks and come back with an answer.
And I know, having gotten to know Ollie Dingley over the years, he will always say experience was a massive part of what he did in getting to an Olympic final in Rio. And maybe that's what you need, some experience. You need more big events like this.
Yeah, hoping to get a couple more of these under my belt. So hopefully we gradually improve every time.
Yeah, well done to him. I hope Jake isn't too down. That was a brilliant performance from him. Finally, just a bit of news on the dinghy front of the sailing in Marseille. It did not go ahead today because of the lack of the winds. I think that's been the story of the sailing so far. Finn Lynch was due to compete there. So we're waiting when that will go ahead, probably tomorrow, weather permitting. So that's it from Paris, Marie. All eyes now on just after 10 o'clock Irish time. And that big boxing final.
Absolutely, Darren. So what happens? Do all the journalists, all the RTÉ contingent meet up and get in and go watch it together? What's the plan over in Paris?
I'm afraid, Marie, there's too much work to be done for any of that sort of carry on. We're all here in the office, and a few people who are working at the event this evening have the golden ticket. But I'll be here in the studio, but we'll be cheering Kelly on, and hopefully we'll be talking about a gold medal when we speak to you next.
I'm heading up to Diamond Park to watch it, so I'm looking forward to
brilliant.
That.
Yeah. What a night that's going to be.
Absolutely. Where the action is, for sure. Darren, thank you so much. As always, we'll be chatting to you again over the next little while. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. Lots happening on the football front, and just a little bit of news that it looks like Lee Carsley could be taking charge of the England team when they face Ireland in the Nations League in just a little while. We'll be talking to Mark Langdon about that.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We're going to turn our attention to football. Paul Corrie is with me in studio. Mark Langdon of the Racing Post joins us on the line. So, Mark, I was just reading social media there, actually X, and a little line came up that Lee Carsley is likely to take interim charge of England when they face Ireland in Dublin next month. What do you reckon?
Hi Marie. Yeah, I think that that makes absolute sense in more ways than one, really. Obviously, England haven't got a manager in place yet. I don't think the Nations League is at the top of kind of the priority list. They want to make sure that they get the right person in place for the World Cup qualifiers that are taking place. I mean, the draw's in December, isn't it, for that. So, it's also allows Carsley maybe the opportunity to just get a feel for, you know, whether he's the right person for the job, because I think it works both ways, this, isn't it? Because if the Football Association kind of say to Lee Carsley, right, you're interim manager, and it goes badly, then they know that they definitely need somebody else. If it goes well, then maybe they can just increase that interim for a little bit longer. I think there are people within the FA that would like Carsley to get the job. He's done well with the under-21s. I think he is the right sort of type of character that they're looking for. He wouldn't sort of rock the boat, and he knows the system, and you know, it's been a successful kind of pathway previously with Gareth Southgate. De La Fuente, the Spain national team manager, had a similar rise. You know, I don't think you need to be this really high profile manager necessarily to be the international manager. And had they appointed Carsley straight away and it starts to go badly, then the FA look like idiots, really. So I think this kind of just buys them time and sort of gives Carsley first dibs on the job. Whether somebody else becomes available, you know, maybe in a couple of months' time, it doesn't start well for Eddie Howe at Newcastle and he's sacked, and that, you know, you've got somebody ready-made to come in. So I think this is a wise move, really, from the Football Association, that there's no need to panic or rush into this. Hopefully it doesn't take as long as what it did for Ireland to fill their vacancy, but a more sensible time frame would be I think beneficial for all parties.
It'll be very interesting to see the squad that he picks, because a lot of people would associate Gareth Southgate with being quite a conservative manager
and loyal.
Lee Carsley is probably a little more expansive. At least he has been with his play from what we've seen with the England under-21s. And if he is to play that way, it'd be really interesting to see kind of who he picks and then what starting 11 he goes with. And
yeah, who he doesn't pick would be quite interesting as well, Paul.
Absolutely, absolutely. And listen, he's got two games there. One against Ireland in Dublin, and then they've a home game against Finland 3 days later. So, you know, if you're Lee Carsley and you're looking at those two fixtures, yes, England and Ireland is always quite a... there's a little more riding on those fixtures, but they are good opportunities for him. I know it's only a short period of time that you're working with the players, but even just to change it up, if you could change it up, get good results, and maybe get an extra gear out of some of those players than what we've seen in competitions gone by from certain individuals, he might just put himself up the yeah. pecking order.
It would be quite the turnaround, really, when you think about it, Mark, because for so long he was linked with this Ireland job and nobody was really sure what was on the horizon with England, and now he's going to be in the dugout, and actually he will be there not that long after Ireland appointed a manager, so it's quite a strange one.
It really is, and I think had he not won the sort of Euros, sort of under 21s with England, there would have been less, I think, desire for some for him to become sort of the England manager. I mean, he had a steady playing career, but wouldn't be one that sort of jumps off the page that, you know, like maybe some of the others that have been linked with it, including, say, a Frank Lampard or whatever. But I think it's the way that he's carried himself within the job and the style of football, that the football has been very good and entertaining, as just was alluded to there, really, from the under 21. So whether you will see, like, I don't know, a Wharton come into midfield to just sort of dictate play more, who knows if he'll be kind of brave enough to drop Bellingham back to alongside Rice and sort of just get Foden into a more natural position. I think it will be interesting, because he could play to the galleries and sort of, you know, do all the things that the England fans and media have been asking for. I think there'll be an interesting one, who starts up front, who's named captain. We have seen other England managers before sort of, you know, start to make those calls and sort of really stamp their authority on it. So I'd be surprised if he kind of went for a different captain, say, outside of Harry Kane, assuming he's available. But there is a clamour at the moment, sort of within, I'd say, sort of sections of the media that just want to see somebody else up front, and therefore a different captain.
Paul, it's much easier, though, to play the type of football that you want on the under 21 stage, isn't it, than trying to try things on a senior setup?
Yeah, that is true, and there's less eyes on 21s games than there is on the senior side. But I still think when you look at the depth and strength that England have within their squad and the players that they have and the profile of the player, the age of the player, you know, England should dominate Ireland when they play against Ireland. They should also do similar when they play against Finland, and they should own the ball, and they've certainly got enough flair within their side to actually open it up a little more and be that little bit more expansive. I think if Lee Carsley can do that within those two games, I think he's got a really good opportunity of landing that job, Marie. When we were speaking about the Ireland vacancy and Carsley being linked to it, I thought his stock was always going to be too high and that the opportunity was going to come about when Southgate left to really put himself in the shop window, and I think everything is lining up really well. The FA like to promote from within, and I'm sure they would like to put Lee Carsley in that job if they feel like it goes well in that September window. But you're right, of course, there's more media, there's more eyeballs, there's more scrutiny of the style of play, the personnel, and then also the results. I mean, Gareth Southgate was quite successful in his tenure as England manager, and you just saw the media headlines that he got in the Euros just gone by and how much that must have worn on him. So yes, it's definitely a test, but I think it's one that Lee Carsley would be more than comfortable dealing with, and probably feels that the journey that he's been on to date has prepared him well mm-hmm. for this stage.
Okay, well, it just adds another layer of interest to that Ireland-England game when it comes around. Mark, there's a lot happening on the football transfer front, and it's quite notable the amount of players that are linked with moves back to Ireland. One rumour that is been widespread is that Aaron Connolly may perhaps come back to Galway United while he seeks a new club in England. Now, it's one of those rumours that it feels like it's just a rumour. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Connolly's remarkable, really, the way that his career has gone sort of, you know, downwards, really, from when he first broke in and, you know, in the Premier League. And I mean, I think it was against Tottenham. I seem to remember him sort of having a great game there, and just looked like he was sort of destined to be a real kind of big talent. And I don't know if he's sort of maybe chosen some wrong career moves, sort of gone sort of down to the Championship a couple of times and hasn't worked out for him. Really difficult to know where kind of the ability, like where he kind of is in terms of ability wise now, because it hasn't worked out for him in the Championship, hasn't worked for him Premier League. I mean, I feel like he's better than League One, for instance. So maybe it's just about finding that right Championship club where he can score goals in sort of an attack-minded team. But while you're waiting, you don't want to just be sort of sat around. So I think it would make... I can see why it would make some kind of sense to at least be playing in sort of League of Ireland. But obviously, you know, it would be a kind of big sort of step down from where he has been.
I think there's questions of his temperament, and I think there has been for quite a long period of time. When he broke in, like Mark mentioned there, he was quite a pivotal part of Graeme Potter's Brighton side and was doing really well, particularly kind of stretching Premier League opposition. He notched a couple of goals along the way, and it seemed like he got a big contract for a number of years, and then maybe the motivation seemed to just fall off a cliff, and there seemed to be a couple of people making a couple of comments about his attitude and his application, and that catches up with you, Marie, unfortunately, and that's maybe why he has fallen down the leagues. He's had numerous loan moves. He even went to Italy at one point and it didn't work out there, so it's a bit sad. I thought Hull might have kept him on after the year he scored a couple of goals, 8 and 28 while he was there. Maybe you thought that's a decent enough return, but they've obviously seen something in him that they didn't like. And unfortunately, when you're a free agent, people ask around, and if a number of people have not so good things to say about you, well, then people are less willing to take a gamble on you. And I can imagine he's looking for kind of biggish wages and a big enough package to keep him going in the UK. I can't ever see him come back to the League of Ireland, not at the age profile that he's at today. But I hope he gets a club, mm-hmm. because he showed a lot in his early years that he certainly has something to offer. But whatever it is that's not working out for him, he really needs to rectify.
Yeah, this is probably another fork in the road for him now. So it's important that whatever he does next goes right. Republic of Ireland international Sean Maguire has returned to Cork City, Mark, and that's seen as an absolutely huge coup for the club down there. He's 30 years of age. Actually, Paul, I'll put this to you. Is 30 old now? I'm not sure.
Well, I'm 33, so
as the youngest person in the studio.
Yeah, I mean, Shawnee's probably struggled with injuries in the last couple of years, and he obviously had a good stint when he was at Preston North End and then obviously gone on to Carlisle. I think naturally enough, given the success that he had in the League of Ireland, at some point he was likely to come back. He's just had a young baby with his partner, so maybe the fact that his personal life has maybe taken this turn, the fact that he's out of contract, and there mustn't have been a huge number of options for him to maybe go after within the UK, maybe it made sense to come back to Cork City, where he was so successful winning. He probably would have been there for the league win and certainly the FAI Cup win when he scored the winner against Dundalk. And that's somewhere where he'll be super comfortable, as his partner's from down that neck of the woods as well. So a lot of things probably added up and made sense for him to come back to the league. Could have seen him maybe signing for like a Shamrock Rovers, or mm-hmm. if you look at Bowes desperately need a front man as well. Could have seen a move like that happening, but they've obviously put decent money in front of Shawnee. It says a multi-year deal as well, whatever that means. I imagine it's 3 or 4 years. They're preparing to come back into the Premier Division. They just signed Rory Keating. They're going to have Shawnee Maguire up top. That is some serious firepower. And for Tim Clancy, who was coming out the other week complaining about the wages on offer,
yeah. Now it all makes sense.
They must have one of the biggest budgets, you know, certainly definitely the biggest budget in the First Division, but I'd say they're one of the bigger ones in the Premier Division already.
Yeah, definitely. He's played 200 games in England, seen 11 caps for Ireland. That's quite a career to get 200 games in England, isn't it, Mark?
Absolutely. And at Preston, you know, definitely there were some good times there. And I think the private life, or you know, personal life, sort of we often just kind of gloss over that fact and sort of, you know, just expect footballers to you know just go and travel and kind of, you know, live wherever to make out a career. And Charlie Austin, the striker that, you know, played for Southampton and various other teams, he's recently kind of gone from Swindon in League Two to basically playing part-time football, almost, you know, a couple of levels above park football, really. And he wrote a kind of long sort of thing on LinkedIn as to why he'd done that. And it was basically because he said, like, he'd basically been so selfish and just taken every career decision that went his way. And at some stage, he just wanted to give back to his family and spend more time with them, and, you know, kind of for, you know, for his wife to kind of live where she wants to live. And we often just sort of forget about that, don't we, with sports people, that you know, it's worse in the US, where you can just be traded and moved across state, sort of, you know, one day you can be playing East Coast, another day you're playing West Coast, and you just have to put up with it. But it must be really difficult, I think, for you know, footballers, where and sometimes it is about just moving where you're comfortable and living a better life for yourself, even if you do have to kind of drop down leagues or levels.
Yeah, that's actually a really good way of looking at it, and I hadn't really considered, maybe because I just think about how much money they're getting paid and think, oh, they'll be grand, which is a very narrow lens to look at footballers through. But sometimes I'm guilty at looking at the moves and the fees and the wages and all that sort of stuff. Before we move on to some big moves, and we'll talk about Conor Gallagher going to Atleti and also Alvarez and maybe how much they're going to be going for and what it's going to be like for them. What about Will Jarvis, Paul? Just big player for Damien Duff, and he now returns to Hull. They've asked him back, or they've told him he has to come back.
Yeah, they recalled him back today, and it seems like something that Shells knew maybe a couple of weeks ago, because they recruited Ali Coote and Tulloch into positions that Jarvis has been occupying. But you cannot underestimate the impact that this is going to have on Shells. You said one of their main players, he has been their main man, Marie, all season. Even last night when they're playing Derry City, it was almost like there was an expectation, or there was a need to get the ball to Jarvis and wait or hope for him to create or go past somebody and carve out an opportunity. His goals alone, he scored 8 goals in the league. Shells have only scored 28 so far, so he's contributed in that sense. His assists, his general play is really strong. I mean, he's one of those players, a bit of a throwback, where he glides past people and he takes people on. He's extremely direct, and you can certainly see why Hull City are looking at him. 21 years of age, done really well in the league, to think, okay, it might make sense to bring him back, because he is certainly a player who can play at a higher level. I guess the question now is going to be, how much of an impact is that going to have on Shell's run in towards the end of the season? They have 11 games left to play. Take somebody like that, as well as not Jack Malloy, oh, his name deserts me, just gone to Aberdeen from Shell's, will come back to me later on, but they've lost two of their main players in recent months. That's a huge impact for that side. So I hope it goes well for Jarvis. He had a great impact on the team and on the league while he was here. But certainly one that, not too surprised, one of my mates just texted me, Gavin Malloy. That's exactly who it was.
That was quick.
It certainly was, as did Ronan Lawler. But it's been tough. It's going to be a huge dent in Shelburne's attack and play, but certainly one that you can see why Hull have brought him back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does make sense. All right. Then across the water, Conor Gallagher to Atleti. What do you think of that one? Do you think it's the right move for him, Mark? I sometimes wonder when people go to Spain.
I think Gallagher is a Simeone type midfielder, in that if you were to kind of put down all of his strengths, it is kind of the out of possession work, the way that he gets around the pitch, the way that he wins the ball back. His pressing's very good. The weakness, I would say, and this is all relative because he's still a good player, but it would be on the ball. So you know, Simeone doesn't ask too much of in terms of them, you know, really dictating play, like kind of, I don't know, if you're looking at sort of across at Barcelona, Pedri and Gavi, what they're asked to do is completely different from what Simeone wants his midfielders to do. So I think that will suit Gallagher. I think he goes to a club that has done, you know, reasonably well with the last English player I remember sort of going there, Kieran Trippier, won La Liga, and speaks very highly of his time working under Simeone. I just think that the way that Gallagher was treated at Chelsea was not right. You know, he's somebody that come through the academy, been there since I think he was 8 years old. His family are Chelsea fans. He's a Chelsea fan. And he was basically forced out of the club for PSR reasons, because, you know, as I think everyone knows now, that if you sell a player from the academy, it all goes onto the books, and you know, Chelsea were sailing pretty close to the wind with PSR, and Maresca, the Chelsea coach, was right to say that something needs looking at there, because I don't think that this can be the solution for Premier League teams to just, you know, want to sell their academy players. You should be looking to build the team around the academy players. But I still think that Chelsea's way of getting rid of Gallagher was left a bitter taste, I think, in the mouth of many Chelsea fans.
Well, I have one in studio, Paul.
Yeah, I can certainly understand why Gallagher has been let go from a PSOR perspective, and that certainly encourages, like Marcus has just mentioned, for Premier League sides to help balance their books, to just offload some of their academy players, and that certainly helps. But I think when you look at Gallagher as a player, there's certainly a lot that he can offer. But if Chelsea are to persist and go down the route of trying to be a possession-based side, it's probably not the strongest part of his game. He's extremely aggressive and he brings a lot of intensity and he's infectious in his pressing, but he's probably not the most comfortable on the ball. And I can certainly see why they have maybe moved him out to then free up some more space for maybe some of your more technical players, particularly the likes of an Enzo Fernandez, who they've invested so heavily in. So that maybe makes sense. If maybe Gallagher didn't have as, you know, the technical element to his game, if he contributed a bucket load of goals by arriving late to the box, you could suggest that he should be kept on, should stay, but he doesn't really have that right now. So disappointed to see him go, because you always want to see academy players being given an opportunity. But I can also see maybe why Maresca doesn't see him fitting into the mould of how they want to play. But for Chelsea, I mean, I was just looking here since Todd Bowley came in. Lewis Hall, Billy Gilmore, Mason Mount, Ian Matson, Ruben Loftus-Cheeks, Callum Hudson-Odoi, all out the door. Yeah. You know, academy players. And even before that, you were looking at Tammy Abraham, Tomori. Like, the list really goes on. Even all the way back, I know Nathan Atgate was taken from Holland, but he came through. Some serious players have come through that Chelsea academy and have not gone on to really make an impact in the first, and have been sold for proceeds to try bring in some of the bigger names.
Yeah, it's disappointing when you do reel off all those names together. All right, Mark, just one more then on Julian Alvarez. He's close to completing a move from Man City to Atletico Madrid. It'll be worth over 95 million in total. I'm just reading there that they bought him in 2022 for 17 million. That's a nice little profit.
Yeah, it is. City they are very good, I suppose, in the market. I mean, they got Cole Palmer wrong, but they normally get it right. I think it's a lot of money for Alvarez. He is a quality striker. What I would say is that I said this last week when Andrew was presenting, there just aren't that many sort of strikers around at the moment, and I think that's kind of bumped up Alvarez's value. If you look at, say, Dominic Solanke, you know, Bournemouth want 65 million for him, and you know, it's just because who's got a striker that they want to sell? City have decided that they would get rid of Alvarez at that price. He just wants to play. He wants to be the star striker somewhere. He was never going to dislodge Erling Haaland, so I think it makes sense. I think City need to replace him though, because you know they're a and Haaland injury away from, you know, having to put somebody, you know, probably Foden or something like that in a false nine. So they need to find a striker. And as I just said, there aren't that many around. So it'd be very interesting to see where they decide to head next. I haven't got a clue as to who that will be, but presumably they have got a better idea than I have. And I would expect to see somebody come in before the end of August.
Okay, well, I wouldn't have any sympathy for them anyway, no matter what. Mark, thank you so much, as always. Looking forward to this season getting going, and lots of chats over the next few months. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us, because we're going to be talking to Karen Creed, who is in and around Diamond Park, setting the scene for us ahead of that huge fight for Kelly Harrington.
Game on 2FM.
There is a bit of pressure, yeah, but she will get it. She will get it. Yeah, she's too good. And she's there for the area too, you know. She's going to have a good support around her too, you know. So she will do for us, yeah.
For me, it's like a proud moment, you know. Like, I'm from India back home. Like, I never see any Olympic medalists, you know. For me, it's a great pleasure to see.
Kelly, I said my prayers for you this morning. I wish I did. So she'll bring back the gold. It doesn't matter what you bring back. Once you bring back a medal, and she will be.
I'd say she'll go for gold again. No two ways about it, is it, puppy? No. We have every faith and all that she'll go for gold, but if she gets the silver, that's like, it's an achievement in itself.
Well, Karen Creed has been busy out and about around Portland Row and Diamond Square, getting Diamond Park, getting some of the reaction to what could come for Kelly Harrington a little bit later on. And Karen joins us now. How are you, Karen? Thanks so much for that. It must be great excitement.
There is indeed, Marie. There's a lot of talk of gold, and I was glad someone said no pressure, because I think that's really important for Kelly to know if she was tuning in to what the locals were saying. I mean, they obviously are so hopeful here that she will. You know, I mean, they're saying she's shown a masterclass so far in boxing, and they know her best, they know her well, and they say that she's probably very relaxed going in because she has, of course, got the guarantee of a medal. But of course, they're really hopeful that they'll be celebrating later in Diamond Park. Obviously, it's the crowds are gathering slowly but surely, because it is a late, obviously, fight after 10 o'clock our time. But no doubt there's a lot of people who are just really, really excited for her.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of people are going to be stretching the bedtime to a little bit later, because she's so much in contention for that gold medal. And just in terms of what's happening around the area then, is it it's a big screen in the park and anybody can go, is it, Karen?
Exactly. It is a free event, and this has happened by Dublin City Council, organised after they saw her getting in. They've had the screen there for the quarterfinal and then again the semi-final last Saturday night, and we probably saw the huge crowds that turned out for that. It's expected again tonight. There'll be a lot there. They're getting the big screen that has just been set up in the last hour, and it's ready to go, and anyone can go in. There's already a lot of children coming in, and of course bedtime, as you said, will probably be stretched, because of course, like, Kelly has been such an inspiration to so many people around here. I was chatting to a lot of those parents, some who were in that Vox Pop you played, and a lot would say that whether it's boxing or other sports, they've all been such an inspiration to her. And I guess, you know, that whole idea of dreams can come true, she's, I suppose, just a perfect example of it. She's a really good role model, and I suppose she works very hard. But what I thought was really interesting, and what a lot of people are saying around here, is that she's enjoying it all the time. So, like, she's actually seems to be enjoying being in the ring, even though, God, she's getting obviously a lot of, you know, knocks and giving knocks herself, but people are impressed by what it takes probably to get to that level of sport. And a lot of people around here would say that they're encouraging their children to see Kelly as that example of somebody who can go on to achieve so much, really, you know, and at such a young age still as well, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. She is a role model, and she will inspire another generation tonight, and already has, that's for sure. Karen, I will see you there. I'm trying to convince Paul Curry, he's with me here in studio, to come on the way home.
Please do. I mean, I think there will be space. I mean, you might have to edge in, you know, but I'll find a little space for you. But no, it's great setup, and they've got the benches there for people who might want to sit down. But I imagine Brilliant. All of us will be standing screaming at the screen for those three rounds. But anyway, fingers crossed it will be gold for her, because this community, you know, as they say, there isn't any pressure on her. She's a hero to them regardless. But you just would hope that, I mean, to come and defend her title tonight, that would just be really the icing on the cake, wouldn't it?
It would be perfect. Karen Creed, thank you so much. I will see you later on. Paul Curry, thank you as well for coming into the studio. That is all we have time for. It's been Olympic fever today, and it'll be Olympic fever tomorrow, so do tune in. Thank you to Ronan and to Laura Lee. Rachel May Hannon is up next. RTE 2FM.